Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio. I'm hosting from the mushing capital of the world, Willow, Alaska, and on the line, calling in from sunny California, the writer, director, and producer of Mush the Movie, mushthemovie.com. His name is Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. It certainly has been a very, very exciting Iditarod. We were talking off the air just before this, and it seems like, even though it's been almost 2 weeks, it seems like it just started a day or two ago.
You know, it has. And for folks listening, this is our last show for the 2013 Iditarod. And first and foremost, I want to thank all of our fans and listeners. I've gotten so many emails thanking us for what we've done and lots of tweets and Facebook messages. So I got to send out a whole bunch of shout-outs to all of our fans that stuck with us for the last 12, 13 days. You guys have been awesome. I do want to thank all of you. And Alex, I want to thank you too, buddy. Me and you pulled off another year.
Yeah, and you know, I particularly want to thank you, Robert, and Radio Free Palmer. It has been, it's been more fun than anyone should be allowed to have to be able to be on the radio with you and share things with all of our listeners.
Well, thank you very much, and we'll definitely congratulate all of our fans again before we go. But it has been a very busy week here in Iditarod, of course. The finishers finishing just a couple of days ago. But you want to run down a whole bunch of stats for us here in our last show. And before we do that, Alex, the way that we normally do our final shows, we try to cram as much as we can into the last show to give people, you know, a good send-off, a good farewell. And then, of course, we have our last featured musher of the show. And then we'll sign off and maybe either be on next year or who knows, might be on that Serum Run Trail that you and I have talked about, filming that documentary, or who knows what's to come.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No matter what, it's bound to be interesting. So just to jump in really quickly, unfortunately, late last night we had a scratch, Cindy Abbott, who we talked to and about earlier, scratched in, where did she scratch? In Koyuk, I believe. She had had a very, very difficult run. It had taken her over 28 hours to get there from Eagle Island. She injured herself early in the race and was kind of struggling with a very badly pulled muscle, which, of course, you know, is not a fun thing in general, and specifically it's not a fun thing when you're out with 14 dogs trying to go down 1,000 miles of the Iditarod Trail.
Right.
We have, at the moment, 41 teams that have finished. The last team to come in was Aaron Peck. Christie and Anna Barrington, who we sometimes call the Idita Twins, are just now passing safety at or about to pass safety. So they should be the next teams in. They finished pretty much at the same time last year, and we are kind of expecting that will be the case this year as well. They like traveling together, and so we're expecting to see them in a few hours. Just wanted to briefly run down some stats. If people think that this has been a very fast race, it really has. Even though Mitch Seavey this year was about 3 hours behind the time of his son Dallas last year, who won. This last year there were 14 teams who finished in under 10 days, and this year that was 22 teams under 10 days. And at this time last year, there were 32 teams that had finished, and we're now at 41. So it has definitely been a race that has had a lot of very, very fast racers running in a couple of packs towards the front. The other thing I wanted to mention is Rick Swenson, who's won the race five times. The first time he won the championship in 1977, the top prize was $9,600. When he won his fifth title in 1991, it was $50,000. Mitch Seavey, who won this year, won $50,400. And that's 22 years later. Certainly there are not a lot of things that are the same price now as they were 22 years ago. So we've talked a lot about the economics of mushing, how it's a very expensive thing to run the Iditarod, and really the prize money has kind of stayed the same. It was a little bit higher for a few years. The biggest prize was $72,000 in 2005, but it kind of had fallen back to the $60,000 range, and now it's around $50,000. So that's one of the reasons why the Iditarod Trail Committee is always trying to raise money and think of additional ways to bring in revenue so that they can not only support the race but make sure that the prize money at least stays steady, if not increases.
If I could make one point on that, Alex, just real quickly.
Sure.
I know that you had posted this morning on our Dog Works Radio page a list from the Mushin' Mortician's Facebook page that lists all the prize winnings from 1st to 30th, and then we've talked about before how everybody after that gets the ceremonial $1,049. My question to you, and maybe you know this, maybe you don't, but is the prize money generated from sponsors or from donations from folks that are using, Iditarod Insider and gear and things that people buy, or is that strictly from sponsors? Do you have any idea?
I think it's both. I would imagine it's primarily from sponsors, but I do believe that it's both.
And I believe the purse was a $600,000 plus purse this year. Is that correct?
Right. That's correct.
Right. Okay, continue on.
Another thing we wanted to just mention really quickly is Matt Failer was sent a pizza in Unalakleet by one of his fans. This, I believe, is why the Internet was invented, so that people all around the world, in this case it was someone in Florida, can track where a musher is by the GPS and call and order pizza from a local place in Unalakleet called Peace on Earth Restaurant and Music Company, and then have it delivered out to Matt Failer at the checkpoint on a snow machine. That is a very Alaskan thing, in my mind.
That is so cool. You know, Alex, I wonder if they got it to him in 30 minutes or less. And number two, I've heard that pizza there in Unalakleet is supposed to be world-renowned. I haven't had a chance to have it, but if I ever make it down that way, I'm going to do an extra stop on the Iditarod Trail, whether I'm running or on a snow machine or whatever, and I'm going to stop for one of those pizzas.
Yeah, me too. And I've heard the same thing. Part of me is I grew up in New York, so I'm very particular about pizza, and part of me is very cynical and thinks, well, maybe it's just good pizza for Unalakleet. But regardless, I look forward to trying it out myself, and I'm sure that it is actually very, very good.
Yeah.
The other thing that I just found out a few minutes ago is apparently Travis Beals, when he finished the Iditarod, proposed to his girlfriend Sarah under the Burled Arch after finishing the race, and she said yes. So that's a very cool story as well.
You know, you and I were talking off air just a little bit, and I don't have all of the specifics with the Travis Beals and Sarah. What is her last name? Stokely, I believe.
Yeah.
Their story in the last couple of years, how their house flooded and they had to move all of their dogs away from where they were housing them. They lived down near Seward, and they were thinking, man, I don't know if I can do it. We don't have any money. We don't have any sponsors. We don't have any way of getting to the start of that Iditarod. But just like most mushers will tell you, if there's a will, there's a way. And they found a way to generate the money to do all of their qualifiers and get it done. And here they are finishing Iditarod. Kudos to those guys. They're a very young couple. I think Travis is 21 years old or so. Way to go. Way to start out your mushing career.
Yeah, and if nothing else, you always have an amazing story to tell your kids and grandkids.
That's exactly right.
Another thing I wanted to point out is we talked about Justin Savitas, who came in this afternoon. Karin Hendrickson, who's one of the mushers I interviewed for Mush the Movie, just came in a little while ago. It's her fifth Iditarod and her, I believe, third finish. So we congratulate her. You know, we congratulate everybody who finishes. We congratulate everybody who runs the race. It, as we've talked about, it's a very, very difficult thing to do. I was talking to some friends this afternoon, and one of them said, you know, I've worked really hard this week, and I'm exhausted. And I pointed out that Jim Lanier, who is 73 years old, just finished the Iditarod sled dog race this afternoon, and he's run and I believe finished it 16 times. So I said, you know, I don't think any of us have a right to complain about being tired when we've got this 73-year-old guy who's out in sub-zero temperatures running dogs for 1,000 miles.
He's one heck of a guy. I know we mentioned on the previous broadcast, I got the chance to meet him for the first time this year when he was the honorary musher at my daughter's Willow Junior 100 race, and he joked with Vern Halter, perennial Iditarod veteran, Yukon Quest veteran, and he said to Vern, you know, I thought the honorary mushers only got this honor after they are dead. He said that to Vern Halter. Vern and him made quite a chuckle about that, but excellent guy, great stories. What a better way to honor the Iditarod with a guy like that, 73 years old. What a task.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just to make a little point about how the race has changed, since it's our last broadcast, we're kind of throwing in a lot of miscellaneous stuff. But in 1973, in the first Iditarod, Dick Wilmarth, who won the race, his winning time was 20 days and 49 minutes. And the Red Lantern that year was a guy named John Schultz, who came in 32 days, 5 hours, and 9 minutes. In contrast,
wow.
Last year, the Red Lantern was Jan Steves, who came in 14 days, 11 hours, and 57 minutes. So last year's Red Lantern winner was faster than the guy who won the first race. And part of that is that, you know, the dogs are a lot better athletes. The trail is better prepared. There have been some technical innovations in equipment and so forth, but it does go to show you that it used to be a much, much longer event, and now it's all become compressed.
Yeah, by half the time, like you said, the Red Lantern winner there was 32 days, so with last year's Red Lantern with Jan Steves, that's more than half the time, considering, 41 years of mushing. And a lot has changed. A lot's changed in the last 10 or 15 years since I've been on the back of the sled, not only with dogs and sleds, but gear and the way that we take care of ourselves as mushers and everything. I think everything about mushing has changed except for the love of the dogs and being out there on the trail.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked last night, and we've talked, I think, for the past few nights about this sled dog named May, who was running on Newton Marshall's team, who is actually one of Jim Lanier's dogs, who got loose and Newton ended up being withdrawn. And there were reports of May being spotted at various points on the trail, and we're happy to report, most people have, I think, seen this at some point today, but we're happy to report that May has been retrieved and was caught by a couple of snow machiners, and they have given her some hot food and are bringing her back to her kennel. She was caught over 150 miles from where she got loose. So it seems like she, as we had reported, she was very much going back down the trail in the opposite direction to go back to her kennel.
You know, and she was caught, I know exactly where she was caught in terms of the trails that they had mentioned. We got an email last night from our local mushing club, and that's not too far, by the way, the crow flies from where the start is in Willow. So, you know, dogs have amazing abilities, amazing senses to work their way back. And what a tenacious little dog. You know, I always think every year that there's one story that sticks out in every Iditarod aside from, you know, the people winning and the mushers doing this or that. I think this is the story of this year's Iditarod. Man, she ought to be given you know, one of those golden harnesses or something. She's done one heck of a thing. She's made it back. She's not only made it from where she got lost, but made it all the way back almost to where she started.
Right, and so not only did she go over the down the steps in the Dalzell Gorge, but she then turned around and went back up those places, which you don't hear very often about anyone doing that.
Right. And I'm just surprised, you know, that she was able to feed herself and work her way back. The email that we got last night that says, well, she did another 40 or 50 miles today. You know, that's a long run, and I guess she still had on her little red harness, which is amazing. You know, she didn't get caught up in any tree. She didn't fall prey to any predators. She didn't get caught in any traps, which is very common on a lot of these side trails. She is the hero of the Iditarod, at least in terms of making it back home, going the other way.
Yeah, and the people who actually finally caught up with her and caught her said that they didn't, even though they saw the harness on her, they didn't think that it could possibly be this dog because it
right.
was too far from where she had gotten loose, and also they thought, well, you know, no dog could survive that far. She must have been, you know, she must have fallen prey to a coyote or a wolf or something. But we are very, very happy to report that she is safe and will be reunited with her kennel mates shortly and should be fine.
You know, just one more note on that, Alex, is I mentioned that we got that email from the local mushers list. And, you know, during the mushing season, almost daily, we will get an email blast out to all of us members that says that this dog was lost or this dog slipped her harness or this dog, escaped from her kennel or whatever. And, you know, Alex, almost every single time, those dogs are reunited with their kennels, with their owners. That's an amazing thing. You've been up here. You know exactly what this country's like up here in Willow and the surrounding areas. It's in the middle of nowhere. And a lot of people think, well, you know, Anchorage is a big city, a big cosmopolitan city. But as soon as you drive up 30 or 40 miles north, you are literally in the middle of nowhere. And it's just amazing that these dogs can be reunited with their owners in such a timely fashion, usually in less than 24 hours.
Yeah, and the other thing about that is that there is such a strong community. And
right.
I believe that's always been so, but especially now with social media and with people being able to do a kind of very, very quick outreach, it's really brought a lot of people together whenever it's needed, such as when a dog is lost or when somebody's in trouble.
Right, and it's very common for other mushers, other families to go out looking for these other dogs on snow machines or with their dog teams or in cars if it's during the summertime. And like you said, it's a excellent community that we have here. And, you know, there are so many happy reunions when these dogs are found and reunited because, you know, we've talked about this before. So many of these dogs are spooky. They're afraid of people and new surroundings. They're so used to being with their pack, with their mushers, and being around, you know, their familiar surroundings. And when that is disrupted, they get a little spooky. They're not your typical house pet. They're not your typical Labrador Retriever that if you say come, they're going to come running with their tail wagging.
Right, right. You know, while we have a minute or two, I just wanted to give a special shout out to someone who I think is one of the unsung heroes of the Iditarod, and that is Chief Veterinarian Stu Nelson. He has a team of about 40 trail vets who leapfrog up and down the Iditarod Trail on these small plains. They're all volunteers. Most of them actually come from outside of Alaska, and a few come from places like, I think there's one from New Zealand this year, and Australia, and all over the world. And these people are just absolutely dedicated to making sure that the dogs are well taken care of and that any dog that has issues, the issues are dealt with in a timely manner. And in front of it all is Stu Nelson. And for people who are watching the finishes either on Iditarod Insider or anywhere else, you can always see him. He's always there in the background. He's a very tall guy, and he's always wearing this kind of dark green coat, and he is one of the first people there, and you can see him. He's still watching the dogs as they come in and making sure that the dogs are all right.
You know, one thing I heard on your movie, Mush the Movie, is you were talking to Stu there on an interview, and he said that they will do approximately 10,000 examinations during Iditarod, this team of 40 vets. Man, they are a busy crew for the week or two that they're out there. Man, what a job that those guys have. And, you know, I think that there's probably a waiting list of several years to get on that list to be one of those vets. People are just reared at the bit to get that opportunity, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. And it's, you know, it's very much an amazing working vacation is kind of the wrong word, because they put in a tremendous amount of work at a lot of these remote checkpoints. They work in shifts, and they're on for 8 or 10 hours, and then they're off for a few hours, and then they go right back on. And when the dogs come in, they wherever possible, they examine each and every dog, and they check their heart, and they check their lungs and their breathing, and they check them for pulled muscles and things like that. And you know, I almost hesitate to say this because I am superstitious, as we know, and I don't want to jinx it, but we have had zero dog deaths in the Iditarod for the last 3 years in a row, and it looks like we're going to have a fourth year with no dog deaths, and it's due to a lot of reasons, but a big part of it is the amazing work that Stu Nelson and his vet team does.
And you know what's amazing? We've mentioned this just a little bit with the Air Force. And again, like I said, this is like Alex said, this is our last show, so we throw a lot of stuff out there. But all of those pilots and crew that fly these dogs all around to get back to their kennels and to their owners, and all the work that goes into that, even the women at the local correctional facility and how they take care of the dogs. We were assisting Hugh Neff last year. When all of his dogs were dropped, we had to go down there to the prison to pick them up. It is a huge network just getting the dogs shuttled around from over 1,000 miles of wilderness back here to Anchorage or Fairbanks or wherever they're coming into, and it's all seamless, and it happens 24 hours a day.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things about Iditarod is that it is a logistical nightmare, and it always seems like it can't possibly all come together and it can't possibly work. And yet there are thousands of volunteers who work the race every year and make sure that as much of this stuff is as seamless as possible. And so it really comes across as a very, very well-oiled machine. And it is all because there are thousands of people over more than 1,000 miles who are working their butts off for, you know, 2 weeks at a time. So it's a kind of amazing thing to see everyone come together. And a lot of times the volunteers are not people. I mean, people come up and volunteer year after year, but a lot of times you're thrown together with people you don't know, and everyone seems to get along very well, and everyone learns how to work together very well. So it's a wonderful thing.
It is. And you know what's interesting about that, Alex, is after that last mushers in, pretty much just dissipates and goes their own way, and most of them stay in contact, whether it's email or Facebook or whatever. And then all of a sudden, come end of February, beginning of March next year, it's like a homecoming to a lot of these folks. Everybody just comes back together, and it's one big happy family again, at least in terms of the crew. And, you know, the mushers, they see each other all the time on races and that sort of thing. But all of these volunteers from all over the world, they just get back together next March and ready to go again.
Yep. Yeah. That's part of what makes it exciting, and part of what I think keeps us as fans and a lot of people as volunteers and as mushers coming back year after year.
So, Alex, we scheduled a 45-minute show today. We have 20 minutes left. We do have to end it right on time today, so we have plenty of time to continue our discussion here on the last night of Iditarod. I know we want to get to our featured musher, our last featured musher of our broadcast for 2013. But what else is happening out there on the trail? How does the field look right now in terms of who's left on the trail? You know, we've talked about that Red Lantern a lot. Right now it looks like Bob Klupach is out of Unalakleet, so he's off of the Yukon River right now, making his way towards the last few checkpoints. What else is happening with the last 20 or so mushers out there?
Well, we've got the rookies, James Bullock and Christine Roloff, whom we've talked about quite a bit, have been traveling together. They're a few hours ahead of Klupach. So, and then towards the back of the pack, Mikhail Telpin, who's the Russian musher who started with those 12 interesting looking dogs. He still has all 12 dogs on his team. He's running a very determined, somewhat slow, but very deliberate race. And he is, he's towards the back of the pack. He's currently 51st, but he's already in kayak. So, and then ahead of him, we've got, the Barrington twins, Jody Bailey, Mike Williams Sr., Gerald Sousa, Louis Ambrose, Angie Taggart, who has gotten a lot of – I'm sorry we didn't have a chance to talk about her more. She's gotten a lot of attention on social media because she's a teacher, and there have been a lot of things with classrooms and teachers from all over the world who are following her and paying special attention to her. And, you know, it seems like it has gotten considerably colder than it was certainly at the beginning of the race. And the winds, which had been relatively calm when the first teams were coming into Nome, have picked up. And it's now so windy in Nome that they actually had to take down all of the banners in the on the finishing chute because they were afraid that they were going to be blown away.
Wow. You know, Alex, if I can just mention a couple of these people that are still out there. Angie Taggart, she's doing something pretty cool for breast cancer awareness. I'm sure you've heard this story or at least followed it on Facebook. Her mom is a cancer survivor. And what she did was at the start is she sold or had people sponsor names on the dog coats for a loved one, whether they've succumbed to cancer or a cancer survivor or dealing with cancer right now. And she put these all on the dog coats as they left the ceremonial start, which is a great way to honor your loved ones. And another cool thing that she did, and I'm sure you know this, Alex, that dog booties are a very big souvenir for a lot of fans at the start and the restart up in Willow. And what she did was very cool. She had a lot of her former students or students from around the country write little well wishes on these booties that the dogs wore as they trotted down 4th Avenue on their way to the airstrip. And, of course, those are highly coveted souvenirs. So I think that's pretty cool. She's definitely a people's musher. She's very active on Facebook and appears to be a very humble musher. She was on my mushing radio show a few months ago. Great storyteller. I'd love to have the teachers on. They're such an inspiration to all the kids. But another one, Alex, Luan Marquez. He is a neighbor of mine for the last couple of years. He's working with Vern Halter's kennel. This is the young man that's from Brazil. And that's a pretty remarkable story in of itself. He came up here to run the Iditarod, a story very similar to Newton Marshall's. You know, he came up without any mushing experience at all, very rarely had ever seen snow, and came up to Alaska to work with Vern Halter and Dream a Dream Dog Farm, and over the last couple of years has done very, very well in all of his qualifying races and races that led up to the Iditarod. So he has become a very accomplished musher. For a young man that's hardly ever seen snow in his life to come up here and live the Alaskan life and live the dream for the last couple of years, it looks like he's going to finish. He's in Koyuk right now and doing very well. He does take a lot of rest, and that's one of the things that that Vern preaches to all of his mushers and all of the folks that run under his kennel. He is a big proponent of the dogs getting as much rest and as much food as possible. And as Luan said in his bio and on several interviews leading up to, he just wants to finish with a happy dog team. He knows he's not going to finish first. He's not worried about that. He just wants to have the experience and make it a positive experience for his dogs. And then we talked about Bob Klupach and Christine Roloffs. Christine is the pediatric dentist that lives downtown with a group of dogs, which is a pretty remarkable story in and of itself. And then old Bob, he's been mushing since the early 80s. He's an old-timer, and he's back at it. And this is the second Iditarod in a row, and it appears that he's caught that bug again, and he's ready to continue on. And as we talked about Jim Lanier, you're never too old to run sled dogs.
Yeah, and, you know, it is actually – we talked about a few days ago about the changing of the guard and the new generation that's coming up. And it seems to me, looking at least this year's race, that the older generation is not quite ready for that changeover.
Right.
You know, we've seen Martin Boozer and Mitch and Jeff King all were really, for most of the race, all were right up there in the front. Martin faltered a little, you know, in the last third of the race, but certainly Mitch and Jeff, who are both in their 50s, were right up there, and I think if a few things had gone a little bit differently, Jeff King could have won this year.
Exactly right. Do you know anything about Mike Williams Sr.? I know his son, Mike Williams Jr., has already finished the race, but Mike Williams Jr. still out there at this point in 45th place, and my tracker might not be as updated as yours. Do you know anything about him? I know he's a Alaskan native. He lives out there in the bush somewhere. Pretty big guy. And I can say that because I'm a pretty big guy myself, but he's a pretty big guy out there wrestling around a dog team. Looks like he has 10 dogs at the moment. What do you know about Mike?
I know that Mike is one of these native Alaskan mushers. He's run the race a whole bunch of times. He is traditionally he runs the race for the cause of sobriety, and is a big proponent of that and of making sure that the message about staying sober comes through, especially out in the bush. He ran his first race in 92, and I think he's run about 15 or 16 Iditarods. I know that he had a couple of years ago health issues and was going to run the Iditarod, and then at the last minute got sick, and then his son took over and ran his team. But he didn't want to stay away for too long, so he ran last in 2009, and is back again this year. And you know, he's 62, and he is a Yupiak. I hope I didn't mispronounce that terribly. And moved back to Akiak after he retired because he wanted to live. He loved that that lifestyle and that more traditional native lifestyle and wanted to be part of that. So I don't know a lot about him, but I know a little bit.
You know, just one side note, at least from my point of view, I've never had a chance to interview or speak to either Mike Williams Jr. or Senior, but I do follow them on Facebook and we have talked time to time there. But you know what I find so interesting about a lot of these native mushers is they are still doing a lot of things like they did back in the early days of Iditarod. They aren't as high tech as some of these some of the big name mushers with the fancy sleds and the fancy dog boxes and that sort of thing. And maybe it comes down to just having the availability of things out there. You know, everything has to be flown in on plane, everything from a six-pack of soda to 1,000 pounds of kibble. So that could be one of the reasons why they are so traditional in the way that they do things in terms of mushing. But they often still use their dogs for other things, where they'll take their dogs and run them to the grocery store to pick up supplies and that sort of stuff. I don't know about Mike Williams Sr. in particular, but a lot of these guys still use their dogs to work as well. I think that's so cool that that people are still using their dogs for what they were meant for, not just the sport of Iditarod.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the native mushers tend to do extremely well on the coast. They, you know, they tend to have dogs that are just great for running in the winds that they have in the coast and running on that relatively flat area. So I'm not exactly sure why that is. It probably has something to do with how they train or where they train. But you often will see teams like John Baker's team, which just absolutely tear up the coast once they get to the last part of the race.
Right, and you know what's interesting? I believe it was John Baker who I heard spoke. And Alex, we have about 9 minutes. I want to make sure we get in our featured musher. Is he said a lot of his dogs, or at least a lot of native dogs, don't even use houses. They prefer not to even sleep in the houses. You know, most mushers have the rectangular square houses that I have in my kennel, and as well as most other kennels. The big village dogs or the dogs out there on the coast, they don't even use houses. They would prefer just to dig a hole in the snow, curl up, and lay down, which is way back in the early days of mushing. That's how they took care of their dogs, and that's where they prefer it today.
Yeah, it's very interesting seeing the way some of these old traditional ways get married to some of the newer things that have come up in the last few years.
Exactly. Okay, let's talk about our featured musher. 8 minutes left, Alex, our last broadcast for 2013. Who are we talking about tonight?
Tonight we are talking about Paige Drobny, and she is already a known. She finished this year's race in 34th place as a rookie. She's 38 years old. She was born in Pennsylvania, moved around a lot as a kid, and she has a bachelor's degree in biology from Virginia Tech, and then she got her master's from the University of Alaska in fisheries oceanography. After she finished school, she worked in Colorado as a fishery biologist and then moved up to Fairbanks. She started mushing in 2006. Because she loved the Alaskan wilderness and wanted to find a way to get out into it and be able to explore and camp and just be really a part of the outdoor lifestyle. She's married to Cody Strait, and they together operate the Squid Acres Kennels. She says that her hobby is fish. I don't know if that means studying fish or catching fish, but they have about 50 dogs in their kennels, and they as a lot of mushers do, they not only raise and train their dogs for racing, but they also do guided dog sled expeditions and take people out on sleds to give them a taste of what it's like to be running behind a dog team. In addition to that, they started a company called Dog Paddle Designs, and they make custom-made dog sleds and skin boat kayaks. So it's a lot of very meticulous working with their hands and making sure that they have something that is both very, very functional and also, also eco-friendly. Cody has a master's degree in anthropology, specializing in human ecosystem interaction, which is a phrase that up until a few hours ago I had never seen before. Human ecosystem interaction. Paige ran the Yukon Quest in 2012, and she finished in 14th place and won the Sportsmanship Award, which is an award that is voted on by the mushers. And this year, she raced the Yukon Quest 300 while Cody raced and finished in the Quest. An interesting thing about Paige is that, like a lot of mushers, she has to, it's difficult for most mushers to raise the money to run Iditarod and to chase after and try to get sponsors and sponsorships. So a lot of people are doing kind of interesting things and unusual things and innovative things. And one of the things that Paige has done that several other mushers do is she's put up sponsorships for different dogs in her kennel. So one of their dogs, a dog named Kraken, is sponsored by a middle school homeroom class in Springfield, Massachusetts, which is not too far from where I grew up. Another one of her sponsors is Sullivan Steakhouse in downtown Anchorage. And so she put a blog post up about how they had a big party for her and her supporters there and a pre-race dinner on Friday night. When she started the ceremonial start in Anchorage, her Iditarider, the guy riding in her sled, was her father. Her brother had bought the Iditarider slot as a surprise birthday present for their dad. So she had her father riding along with her for the first 11 miles of her first Iditarod, which had to have been a really wonderful, special event. And, you know, she had a very, very solid race. Seemed to be making really good time throughout the race. We didn't talk about her a lot, but she was pretty solidly in the middle of the pack. Seemed to have a very, very good race with nothing catastrophic happening. And as I said, she's in Nome now, and she finished early this morning with 10 dogs.
And do you know what she said at the end? She said that she's ready for pizza and beer.
which again, we seem to have a pizza-heavy show tonight.
We do. You know, I think, you know, and pizza is one of those things that I take just about on every long-distance run that I do. I put it in the food saver, put it in the freezer, and when I'm at the checkpoints, after I fed the dogs, I'll dip my pizza in the boiling water and, you know, reheat the pizza because it's frozen solid, and I will eat a slice of pizza as my meal. I'm a firm believer, and I've eaten pizza in just about every state that I've ever visited. Pizza is the world's perfect food. It has every single one of those food groups that we studied about in school. So how much better for a musher than that perfect food of pizza?
And, you know, in a pinch, I think the dogs will enjoy pizza as well.
Oh, yeah. I have one of our house dogs who's also one of the dogs on our team. His name is Bodie. He will sit down and eat an entire pizza with me if I let him. So,
gotta
Alex,
love that.
Two minutes left here on our final show. Who do you want to thank in particular? Do you have anyone that you want to send a shout-out to in terms of personal shout-outs? And then I'll do the same right before we close.
I want to thank everyone who's been following us on Facebook, everyone who follows us and has interacted with us on Twitter. We have a lot of Twitter pals, and we're always up watching the tracker late at night. So I want to say a special shout out to all of those people. And then before I go, just one more quick plug. You can pre-order Mush the Movie at mushthemovie.com. And if you order before the Red Lantern comes in, I'm throwing in free shipping. So you'll get that in a few weeks. Mushthemovie.com. And, of course, once again, Robert, I want to thank you for putting this all together and having me on. It's been a tremendous pleasure.
Well, thank you very much, Alex, and likewise to you. When I brought this to you last year, you jumped at it and were ready to go with very little warning, and we did the same thing this year. I think you and I started talking about this year's race just a couple of days before the ceremonial start, and here we are. We made it through another year. So again, thanks to you. Radio, no matter how you look at it, is so difficult to host by yourself. You're pretty much talking to the wall, so it's very difficult to do on your own. And very quickly, I do want to thank our radio studio, Radio Food Palmer, KVRF. I want to thank my wife, Michelle. She was on a few days ago. And all the wonderful dogs, not only out there on the trail, but the ones that we have in our kennel. They allow me to do what I do, and this sport would not be what it is without them. So this goes to all those wonderful dogs out there who are putting their heart and soul into every single step that they take, and I want to thank those guys. Alex, it's been a pleasure, my friend. We will definitely talk throughout the year and see what happens before next March.
That sounds good, and I just want to remind people that although our broadcasts are over, the race is continuing, and we'll be doing stuff on social media, so follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and we'll keep posting until the Red Lantern comes in.
And do not forget to listen to Mushing Radio every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Alaska time, and podcast available anytime, mushingradio.com. For my co-host, Alex Stein, this is Robert Forcho. Thank you very much for joining us during the 2013 Iditarod. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.